Well, thank you again, Jenny, for our extra long reading, but what a story. It was a brilliant one this time. In fact, the whole thing has been great. Marion talked about the roller coaster of the story. Nikki talked about East Nilers, I think. There's a lot of this story, different things going on, like a soap opera or something. And this week we have more that we can look back on, because we've done that bit already, and more that's part of the story of today, and a little bit of looking forwards as well. But I think that this particular part of the story is kind of the best bit so far, and I would say that it certainly has the best music. Shall we just listen to the story again? Here we go. Just in case you've forgotten. We'll stop there. You can carry on singing to each other later if you want to. Actually, so far, the sermons have ended with Joseph in bad places, the chapters we've been looking at. To begin with, he was left as a prisoner, as a slave of the Midianites, and being taken away to Egypt. Then, the next time, he was left as a prisoner, an innocent prisoner. And then the next time, he's left as a prisoner who'd been promised by the butler that he would get him set free, who completely forgot about him. He was a forgotten prisoner. So those were the endings, three times running, but today it all turns around, which is brilliant. Actually, for all of the fact that there are bad chapter endings, there's a huge amount of God's blessing in the story so far. God blessed Joseph, and he had great plans for him. God blessed him even in the hard times, even when things took unexpected turns, even when he had to wait, even when it just seemed like everything had gone plain wrong, God continued to bless Joseph, to work out his plan of blessing. And at least in this chapter, the blessing shows up on the outside, as it were. You can see it clearly. Well, certainly it's a blessing if you believe that being a prime minister would be a blessing. I'm not sure that I would find that a blessing myself. But in the end, in God's story, and in the story of Joseph, and in the story of Egypt, and in fact in the story of the region, it is a blessing that Joseph became prime minister. And the whole lot unfolded, as we heard at the end. So I want to give you a bit of a reminder of the shape of the whole story, just in picture form. Sometimes some people absolutely love the shape of the stories in the Bible, and quite often the stories, or even just the little passages, the Psalms, or even a part in a passage midway through, has wonderful shape to it that people who study these things love. I'm going to give you a much more simple version of a shape. I'm going to give you a shape which is, where were they? So in chapter 37, there's Joseph with his technicolor face. Okay, it wasn't a technicolor dream coat. It was just a coat with long sleeves or something. But anyway, there's Joseph, and he's there, and he's with his family. And because of the story there, the family are grumpy because Joseph was this horrible teenager who said, "I've had these dreams where you all bow down to me," so there. So the family weren't very happy. But chapter 37, that happens in Canaan with Joseph and his family. But then we move on to the chapters we've had in the last 2 weeks and this week. Joseph goes to Egypt. It wasn't the way he wanted to, but he ends up in Egypt. And actually, these parts of the story are just about Joseph, God and Joseph, and God preparing Joseph. And from next week onwards, when we have Joseph still in Egypt, we begin, this is a spoiler by the way, block your ears otherwise, we begin to get Joseph's family, but they come to Egypt. He doesn't go to them. They come to Egypt. And in the end, total spoiler alert, it all goes good. So that's sort of the whole Joseph story in a few shapes. And at this stage, we're in the middle of the being in Egypt part. And even this bit that we've just read, the bit which is the... I'll use my red thingy there. That bit, this whole chapter's here. There's a shape to these ones as well. Because you've got, first of all, 2 weeks ago, Joseph had God's blessing in his job, even though he was a slave. God helped him. And then Joseph had blessing even in prison, where he'd ended up innocently in prison, but God helped him. And finally, Joseph becomes a blessing. The blessing which God's been building up in him sort of bursts out to everybody else. So that's a simple way of looking at it. And now we're on chapter 49, which is Joseph becoming a blessing. Actually, I want to talk about this one chapter in a little bit of shape as well, because this is an interesting chapter. At the beginning of it, we're calling it Joseph versus the Empire. The whole thing is a bit Joseph versus the Empire, because to begin with, in part one of Joseph versus the Empire, the way of the Empire of Egypt was to have slaves, and if the owner's wife decided to accuse you falsely, you went into prison. Well, Joseph was a slave, but he still managed to succeed in human terms. He used the gifts, the human gifts that God had given to him, and he prospered. And even though he ended up in prison, though he did nothing wrong, he still prospered. And that's kind of Joseph versus the Empire part two. He uses his gifts, and yet he does well in prison. And then he doesn't only use his gifts that were sort of natural gifts, he gets extra gift from God, the gift of interpreting dreams. And so he's able to interpret people's dreams in the prison there. And so in part two of Joseph versus the Empire, the empire is beaten by God's blessing because of some sort of beyond human gifts that Joseph is given, as well as his human gifts that he uses so well. And today we are Joseph versus the Empire 3, and we discover that actually the last bit has just been preparation. We were just getting to this bit where it all works out. Joseph, in a sense, wasn't all that better off in terms of where he was at the end of the last two bits, even though, you know, he was in prison and he was still in prison. But at least in this chapter, he isn't anymore. So, today's passage, Joseph versus the Empire, in the beginning of it, the first eight verses, we discover the Empire is weak because Pharaoh, who's the boss of the Empire, has had dreams that he can't understand. And so he doesn't know what to do, and he's supposed to be the one who everybody comes to, but he's struggling with his dreams. And at the end of this chapter, if we just jump across, we get Joseph is in charge of the empire. Wow, that's amazing. How does that happen, though? What has gone on in between? That's the end of anything on the screen, by the way. Just take in the great beauty of the last page, and we'll move on. Okay. So, the all-powerful Pharaoh is troubled by things he can't control. I bet you his life was totally controlled. People told him all the right stories. People did all the right things for him. People sucked up to him all the time, but he can't get away from his dreams. And if God wanted to say something to him, God used his dreams. And all the wisdom of Egypt can't help. The wise people fail. They can't give him his answers. Something else is needed. And at last, the butler, 2 years late, remembers, oh yes, I promised Joseph just a little while ago, 2 years ago, that I would tell you about him and get you freed. So along comes Joseph, having had a shave. I hope he didn't cut himself. And there he is. He's in front of Pharaoh. And he says, no, I can't help, but God can. That's pretty amazingly confident, isn't it? He just talks about God. God can help. God has said this to Pharaoh. God wants Pharaoh to know this. Quite wonderful. So we hear again in our reading the story of the dreams, in case we'd forgotten it from before. And then Joseph interprets it. And it's all about bounty and famine, the sort of things of the land, the things that actually Pharaoh can't do anything about. It comes down to being all about life and death. And certainly Pharaoh, apart from probably asking a few people to be eliminated, he can't do much about life, can he? These are things which Pharaoh has no control of. He's powerless. God shows himself to be much more powerful than this human emperor ever could be. The empire and its leader are not as powerful as God. And Pharaoh must realize he's not in control. But he also thinks that Joseph clearly has a good connection with God, and that Joseph seems to know what's going on. And so, looking at this man with a good head on his shoulders, he says, what about you for the job? Now, I know that in the musical, Joseph is sort of angling for that all the way through. It's not the case. Joseph isn't angling for it. But he's clearly the one for the job, according to Pharaoh and his officials. And amazingly, the story doesn't make a big deal of it. The story doesn't go, amazing, Joseph became the prime minister. It just says, so he did. So that was God's plan. God's plan for putting this right. God's blessing that's been brewing all along. There's blessing for Joseph in the end. Spoiler for next week. There's blessing for his family. There's blessing for Egypt. There's blessing for the region. People came from all over. And God does it all through a spoilt brat who we met back in chapter 37 saying, I had a dream where you bowed down to me. So God can work through that. And God is at the heart of the interpretation. God is everywhere there as Joseph works things out. God's given them to him. God is clearly one who put Joseph there. God is clearly one that Joseph is turning to. And it all comes to pass. And Joseph even gets married and has two children on the way through. So, there's the story. Some different ways of looking at it. What about for ourselves today? I've just got some brief thoughts. I haven't really developed these very much. But if some of these connect with you, then go for it. Just think more about it yourselves. First of all, I wonder what must have been like for Joseph waiting in prison. It was bad enough when he was just totally in prison. And then he was in prison with the promise that the butler will try and let him out. And then it's two more years. Has everyone forgotten him? Has God forgotten him? It must have been really hard for him. And we can feel the same. We sometimes see what's happened. We think, wow, where's everything gone? What's happened? Has God forgotten me? Has everybody forgotten me? Hold on to God. Sometimes God's timing is not the same as our timing. And sometimes God's working on things which take a while to work on. It's very hard. You can't just say it'll all come out good in the end, because that's not actually the way we see it. But we can say that God is able to hold us through even the tough times. And we can hope and pray. And sometimes God's doing things which we don't see on the outside. Joseph kept on in prison for two more years and was ready for the moment when he was needed all of a sudden in God's big plan. And then let's look at who Joseph was. This spoilt kid, or this slave, or this disgraced person ending up in prison even though he's innocent, or the forgotten person who was just left languishing in prison when he thought it was going to work out differently. And he was also somebody who was only 30. These are not things which really give you a huge amount of confidence that he could go up to Pharaoh and end up being prime minister because of who he was and what he knew. Except that it was God who had been planning things, God who had been working on him, God who had been giving him opportunities to learn stuff which he put into use later on. And Joseph was able to trust the experiences that he'd had in his past, and he trusted his natural gifts that God had harnessed and put to good use, and he trusted his God-given gifts that he had no power over himself. God gave him interpretation for the dreams. He had to trust that they would come at the right moment. And he took that combination with him as he went and stood in front of Pharaoh. Amazing that he did that. And it shows us that God can work with difficult raw materials. That 17-year-old was a difficult raw material. We may sometimes think that we're difficult raw materials. What can God do with me? Well, actually, have a look at Joseph and take courage. God can do things with us, however much we feel we may not be the right person. Even when the world seems to be working against us, God can still do things with us. We can have faith that God can work in our lives, however limited we may sometimes think we are. But we do need to have courage in the right moment to step forward and be there for the things that God's got for us. I did a mad thing in the couple of days before going on holiday. I suddenly decided that I would learn something new while I was on holiday. And so off eBay, secondhand, I bought off somebody, rescued somebody from a unicycle and got it delivered to Argos in Anik, which you can do on eBay. So a few days into the holiday, I went and picked up this unicycle, and I've been trying to learn to unicycle. Now, on a good moment, you'll see me on the unicycle for 2 seconds before I come off again. But anyway, what I learned with unicycling is that actually you heroically think you've got to the stage where you're balancing on this thing, holding on very tight to something, and then you've got to let go and pedal. And the way that you have to make it work to pedal to get the balance right is you actually just have to lean forwards until you start to fall and then pedal. And it's very scary. It takes it, and I was having to talk myself into it. Lean forward, then start pedaling. I think sometimes things are a bit like that with God. He is scary enough to get to where we are in the first place, but then he's saying, lean forward and start pedaling, and you'll see it'll work. And I guess probably like me, we have times when we have a go at that, and we're really pleased, and then it doesn't quite work out as we hoped. But God can work with us, and he knows we're trainees, all of us. So just look out for God. Sometimes you may need to lean forward and go for it, see what God can do, see what the natural balance of the way God works will allow things to happen. Anyway, enough of that. Please don't ask me to demonstrate, because I haven't got that far yet. Another thing about Joseph, a third thing, Joseph didn't water down the God stuff for Pharaoh, though he didn't use all the words for God that he might have done as a Hebrew. He kept things simple. He kept things in terms that Pharaoh could understand and make sense of. I think sometimes we hold back from talking about God to people who don't know God as much as we talk about God when we talk to people who do know God. But actually, I think it's really important that we do, where the opportunity is there, not incessantly and off-puttingly, we talk about God in our conversations with other people, but not using the whole language, because people will be lost. So in the same way that Joseph talked simply but clearly about God, there are times when we can just talk simply and honestly about how we see things and how we see God as part of that. Because we may be the opportunity for somebody to begin a connection with God. It may be because they've heard us talking, the way we go about it, the warmth with which we talk about it, the amazement that we find about what God's done for us. No, an amazing thing happened, or wow, I prayed and then an amazing thing happened. You know the difference between that, even? There's something. So we may be the opportunity for somebody. Let's take courage from Joseph and talk about God clearly and not complicatedly, but openly to people. And finally, look what God can do through one small and daring act of obedience. The first thing that Joseph said to Pharaoh was, no, I can't help. And he could have stopped there. He might have lost his head, but a whole load of people wouldn't have been saved. But actually, he said, no, I can't help, but God can. He was obedient to God. And how many people he saved? Chris gives the statistic that there were between 2 and 4 million people in that region in the time. And if the famine was everywhere in the region, then that means quite a lot of people potentially got saved from famine by what happened with Joseph. And that was one person being obedient. That's quite amazing. God did it, though. It was Joseph who did the stuff, but God did the stuff for Joseph. I wonder if we believe God can work through us. I'm sure he can. He made us. He knows how we're made. He knows the gifts he's given us. He can give us gifts we don't have a clue about as well in the moment. Don't underestimate the power of God and how much he can do through you, whoever you are. And I'm going to finish by reading the passage again from Romans 12. We have different gifts according to the grace given to each of us. If your gift is prophesying, then prophesy in accordance with your faith. If it is serving, then serve. If it is teaching, then teach. If it is to encourage, then give encouragement. If it is giving, then give generously. If it is to lead, do it diligently. If it is to show mercy, do it cheerfully. I'm sure all of us can find something in there that fits. And there's more. That's just a few examples. There's way more than that. Love must be sincere. Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in love. Honour one another above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervour serving the Lord. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. Amen.